This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Welcome to Save a Pooch on Pet Life Radio. I am Beverly Isla, your host. Thank you for listening in today. Our special guest is Rachel Horton, director of the Saginaw County Animal Care and Control in Michigan. Now, Rachel is redefining what modern animal welfare looks like, such as shifting the focus from enforcement and numbers to prevention, education, and compassion. And just some stats here, since January 2024, the SCACC, tongue twister, has provided a safety net for 1,035 lost and homeless pets. They completed 734 adoptions, 206 reunifications, and prevented 537 potential owner surrenders through early intervention, so helping families and pets stay together. And under Rachel's leadership, the live release rate has risen to 76.7%, up from 55% in 2023. So when we get back from these messages, we'll be joined by Rachel Horton.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Save a Pooch. We are talking with Rachel Horton, Director of Saginaw County Animal Care and Control. Rachel, thank you so much for being here today. Now, to set the stage, can you share a brief overview of this SCACC's mission and how your approach has evolved since January 2024?
Yeah. So first, thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely.
I'm honored to be here. Since becoming director in January of 2024, I think that our mission really, it didn't change. Like, the actual mission statement didn't change, but the way that we went about it did. So ultimately, our mission is to safeguard the well-being of animals and the community through care and adoption and proactive animal control services, which means that we are providing, you know, services to both people and to pets. And I think ultimately that really shifted for us because we went from a really heavily law enforcement-based organization to a community proactive organization. Instead of writing those citations and trying to gather as many animals as we could on the street, we started changing the way that we operated because writing citations wasn't doing anything for us. We weren't getting any further ahead. So we really had to change our approach and be more community-based and proactive in our approach because we were increasing our numbers, but ultimately we weren't helping more people. We were just writing more citations and still having the same old problems.
Yeah, that's an undertaking for you to do. That's amazing. And because of like animal care, the way it's portrayed in, like, you know, most cartoon movies, I can imagine like the shift that needs to happen in the perception. Now, you've been reframing animal control as animal care. Kudos for that. Now, practically, what changes when a shelter adopts that mindset?
There's so much behind
it. I know. I'm like, oh boy, this is a...
I could go into like so many little caveats of what you just said, but there's so much behind it. I think when you consider, you know, animal control and going from that old school dog catcher mentality to I'm going to be proactive and I want to provide care to people and animals. Like, I don't want to just go out there and collect dogs off the street. I want to have conversations. I want to serve my community. I want to help them be better dog owners. And that's where the shift is. All the shift goes into, you know, more of community policing and giving services and education and help instead of just punishing them for something that they might not understand or just, you know, they want to do right by their pet, but it's a lack of resources. So it all really starts there in having those conversations with your community and seeing how can you help them.
Exactly. Yes. And And that answers my next question, basically, is because your community investment in the animal welfare and how that looks on a day-to-day, and you mentioned it is all about communication. And I mean, as you go, I guess, I don't want to say collecting dogs off the street, that sounds not so good. But do you find when you're connecting with the owners that they have like a hostile attitude, I guess, towards animal control?
I think that it's not necessarily a hostile attitude all the time. Sometimes I think they're just leery of a person in uniform coming
to
their door.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, you know, we are coming to your door unannounced and you don't know why. And then we just kind of start off really strong with all these questions or coming off as kind of accusatory. And that doesn't work for people, right? I think if you approach and go, hey, I'm here from Animal Care and Control, and I want to learn more about you and your pet because I want to help you. You know, just starting off that way and appearing friendly and wanting to help, you get so much further with them. And the more you can keep people talking and having a conversation, the better off you're going to be. And that's in any kind of law enforcement field.
Right.
Because they're giving you more information. So when you start having conversations with people and you start just giving them a moment to be heard, you learn so much more about the situation and how you can help.
And do you find that they're more open to their perspectives?
Yeah. Okay. You know, I think that once you start having that conversation of, oh, you've had a problem with your dog, or you can't contain your dog because they keep escaping out of their leash or their harness, or there's a hole in your fence, or, you know, whatever the reason is. And then you start offering some suggestions, or you have a tether in your truck and you give it to them, or you have a collar and you give it to them and you give them a warning and, you know, to say, hey, I'm just trying to help you, that I don't want to see your dog get hit by a car. I don't want to see it picked up by animal control. Like, it goes so much further. And then the next time, if you do have, you know, more contact with that person, they remember those conversations. They remember how they were treated, and they're much more likely to come to you for help when they need it versus letting things get really bad.
Right, right. Oh, that's amazing that you can lead based off of that kind of compassion, which is a good segue into how are you empowering volunteers and community members to be part of the solution rather than just being spectators?
I think that you have to invite everyone to have some kind of partnership or relationship with you. And if you put out what your goals are and what you need, people often can jump to help you in ways that you never expected. But you have to be extremely vulnerable and transparent and put out what you need. You have to identify your goals and share those with people, because a lot of people want to help and they don't know how to. So I think you really just have to take advantage of people's strengths, you know, especially in your volunteers and your staff. Play to their strengths. What are they good at? What are they passionate about? Like, let them do that work because they're passionate about it and it doesn't feel like work. You know, people in the community, your partnerships, when you put out really big, lofty goals, they understand what you're trying to move toward and they're more likely to help you versus internalizing those. So I think if you're open to just being really vulnerable and transparent and sharing everything pretty much up front and on the table, you'll get so much further. But also, people kind of start gathering to you and partnerships come very naturally at that point. It just becomes, they're kind of rolling in sometimes faster than you can even handle, because now you've put it out there and then the community does want to help.
That is an ideal. That is an ideal, ideal outcome. And that's awesome that you're putting out like the ethics and the work culture is not grimy, I guess, if that makes sense. Now, before we go around the break, these numbers, like the 1,035 pets served, 734 adoptions, those are pretty lofty. And so, like, what interventions had the biggest leverage in achieving those kind of numbers?
Step one for us really was kind of shifting focus for our animal control officers. Getting them to adapt that community mindset and getting their buy-in really was just step one. Because we could give them all the resources in the world, but I can't make them give out vaccines or microchips or dog food if they're not willing to have a conversation. So it was a lot of retraining to begin with animal control officers. So once we got them retrained, we got their buy-in, you know, we got them giving out food. We started a pet food pantry. We started giving out microchips and vaccines. Because we started giving those out, we also started more people start to donate them, including local vet partnerships, and even a couple of pharmaceutical companies started donating them to us. So that helped. Then we equipped our officers with fence fixing kits and other supplies on their trucks, like collars and leashes and tethers and tie outs, just so they could be helpful if it was needed. And then that starts that other conversation of prioritizing what needs to come into their shelter. Because at the end of the day, we have a certain amount of staff, a certain amount of capacity and resources and space. And it's not just an unlimited supply. So when you have that conversation of, you know, prioritizing what you're bringing in and a managed intake, that's also a big change in mindset for all the staff and even the community. Having just asking someone who found a dog, you know, would you consider adopting this dog in the future? Would you consider fostering this dog through its stray hold? Yep, let's bring it in today because you don't have the resources to do that. Like, that's great. Thank you for even considering it. Those people are much more likely to come back and work with you. You know, when they are ready to adopt, they come back. And when you have somebody who says, hey, I'm moving, and they contact you, you know, a few months in advance or a few weeks in advance, you can do so much more for that pet where it might not even have to come into the shelter. You can find an adopter. You can find, you know, a foster or a rescue that's home-based to help them so they don't have to come into our shelter, which is really loud and noisy. And it's not like a home environment. As much as we try, it's not a home. So having all those conversations and just keeping the mindset of being very community focused, managing intake and doing a lot of early intervention, that really helps us achieve those higher numbers.
Yeah, that's amazing. I hope you double that like in no time.
Me too.
Putting it out there. And you did touch on this, but I'll ask it anyways. What's like the systems and supports that you put in place? Is there any other ones maybe that you can give advice to other animal control organizations out there to address that compassion fatigue and even trauma for staff and volunteers? I know that can weigh heavily on them.
Unfortunately, compassion fatigue is so hard.
It is.
Burnout is so hard. When you work in animal welfare, it just comes with the territory, and it is so heavy in our field.
Yeah.
And I love that in our field, we are so transparent about it, and we're transparent about mental health, and we can talk about it. We're open. So I think with my staff, my volunteers, it's being open and honest, being really transparent and saying, you know, I recognize your burnout. Why don't you take a day off? Why don't you go do something for you?
Or right.
Trying to really get them to set healthy work-life boundaries. When you're someone who is constantly serving others and feeling like if you're not there, then animals are suffering, it can be really hard to step away and take a break or do something for yourself, which ultimately, you know, it just leads to more burnout. So having those conversations and recognizing in each other, like, I can recognize you're starting to get a little bit burnout. Why don't you go do something for yourself? What are you doing that's filling your cup? Because I think your cup is really empty right now. So we really encourage that in our staff. And then we do try to motivate them. So we do fun things. You know, we try to celebrate our small wins. We celebrate every adoption, every foster. Everyone who does a meet and greet, we have a group chat and we give a lot of kudos to each other because you get recognized for that and you are deserving of that. We play games like shelter bingo so you can win prizes for doing things that are within your normal job description, but that you're doing really well. So I don't know. Those are some of the things that we do. But I think also just recognizing it in each other and, you know, having kind of like regular conversation about it makes everyone not so afraid to talk about it.
Yes, that's awesome that you did point that out because a lot of people just hold it in. So yeah, that's kudos to you for being the director and of the organization and directing people's mental health because that is a really important piece, taking a break from all of that. Speaking of taking a break, we're just going to have a quick break. And when we get back, we'll continue our conversation with Rachel Horton.
Real people, real stories.
Our little dog developed this lymph problem, but the chemotherapy lasted for 6 months, started developing more lymph nodes. So I thought I'd just try carnivore. The lymph nodes started to go down. Then I took him into the vet to have him checked out, and there was no signs at all inside.
My cat had issues that developed in his eye, and 3 months later, my veterinarian said, let's go ahead and remove the eye. I heard the carnivore on advertising. So I said, you know what? I'm going to order this product. They did the procedure. They did all the tests, and they said, I don't know what you did. This product saved his eye. I've got a Labrador. She could hardly lift herself up off the floor. The treatment was chemotherapy. That's when I said, this could be the ticket. About 3 weeks, you could tell. She was very alert. She was going on 5-mile walk. She is just like prime again.
Call 866-836-8735. That's 866-836-8735. Or visit carnivore.com. That's CARNIVORA.com.
Use promo code PETLIFE at checkout for 15% off your order at carnivora.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Save a Pooch. We're talking with Rachel Horton of the Saginaw County Animal Care and Control in Michigan. Let's switch gears here and let's talk about poverty and pet ownership. What are the most common economic barriers that you see, and how do community and access to care programs change outcomes?
One of the biggest issues that we see is the cost of veterinary care, and then also, you know, changes in living situations. Unfortunately, you know, all those socioeconomical issues that we suffer from trickle down right into our pots and into our shelters. So when people are lacking food, they're lacking housing, it's really difficult to keep that human-animal bond. So we try to help them in any way we can. And whether that's having a conversation with a landlord and trying to, you know, convince them that this person is a great pet owner and this pet is really well behaved and they probably should consider renting to them or whatever. We've done that before for people. Also, just trying to give them access to veterinary care, you know, low cost vaccines and spay neuter as much as we can, trying to help them because it's really expensive. And in Michigan, we're really lucky that we are resource rich. We have a lot of veterinarians around us.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Yeah, other areas of the country don't have that. So even though we have it, it's still really expensive.
Yeah.
But, you know, trying to give everybody all of their options, trying to also assist in that, you know, help as much as we can, that's a big part of it. And I think if you can, again, try to do as much as that intervention and try to keep the human animal bond, that's really what's important. We've had people in Saginaw that were homeless. And just because they were homeless didn't mean they were a bad pet owner. They were just down on their luck.
Right.
And we've housed their animal and they've gotten back on their feet and we've given their animal back to them. And they've been successful in maintaining good standards of living for that pet. So we're glad to assist in that facilitation. So again, I think it's just being compassionate, helping people when you can, trying to give them a break. Don't kick them when they're down.
Amen to that. Like here in Toronto, there is a lot of unhoused people with pets. And I often wonder when I pass them, it's like, wow, like this is a tricky situation because it's on one hand, you know, they're struggling. But on the other hand, they're also trying to keep their pet survive, right?
Yeah, it is a really unique situation. And the more of those situations I've experienced, I realize that those people will put that pet and their needs over their own.
For sure.
Yeah. If it's a choice of who's getting dinner that night,
yeah,
I guarantee it's the dog. So, you know, again, going back to that human-animal bond, I don't want to take an animal away from you when you're at maybe one of the lowest points in your life and you're regularly struggling because they give you companionship and love. I want to be able to reunite them with you. I want you to get healthy and back on your feet. So we try to do all that we can do.
That's great that you do that reconnection piece. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And what misconceptions do you encounter about like live release rates? Maybe you can even explain it a little bit because even I myself don't completely understand. So yeah, what misconceptions do you encounter about live release rates or no kill language? How do you keep that conversation honest while still being trying to improve it?
Oof. No kill is such a subject in
itself. Oh, gosh.
So,
yeah.
You know, no kill was a movement that we did really progressively, and we did an amazing job of coining that term no kill. Whereas now there's kind of a misconception that people think if you're no kill, that means that you don't ever euthanize, which isn't the case,
nope,
right?
Nope, not at all.
But then they also don't understand, like, so my facility in particular, we're animal care and control. we offer low-cost euthanasia services. And every single one of those owner-requested euthanasias that we perform actually counts against our save rate. So even though we're being really compassionate and we're trying to give an animal a humane euthanasia so they're not suffering, we don't want them to suffer at home. We don't want them to go without veterinary care. We don't want them to pass away in pain. We're actually kind of penalized for that because it counts against our save rate. And I think that that's something people don't quite understand. It's not truly fair. But also people don't see the prevented surrenders and the families that we've kept together. They don't see all the animals that didn't even have to come into the shelter to begin with. Like all that other work that's happening behind the scenes, people don't see. They just right. see that one little save rate. And they think that is really what, you know, is stigmatizing your shelter. And they don't see all the other work that's going on behind the scenes.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. No, I can imagine. And even with the no-kill definition, I remember fostering a dog that was a no-kill, quote, organization. And yeah, it came to the point where the dog I was fostering was not being adopted and they had scheduled it to be euthanized. So I had to take it on my own. And I was actually pretty peeved. I'm like, wait a minute, you guys said you're no kill, but here we are.
Yeah, it's some really specific language that's, you know, unfortunately kind of up to interpretation of the person that's asking if you're no kill. So if somebody calls our front desk and they ask, are you no pill? We try to give them some feedback on that and be like, you know, we don't euthanize for time or space or lack of resources. But if an animal has a significant behavior issue that would become a public safety concern, we will euthanize.
Right.
Or if they have an untreatable medical condition, we will euthanize.
Right. Okay.
When you're upfront and honest about that, you don't get all the questions. But then when people see your stats, you know, they think, oh my gosh, you guys are killing every day. And that's not true. We're not just killing for the sake of killing,
yes,
because I don't think anybody gets into animal welfare wanting to euthanize. But, you know, you're trying to be humane and compassionate toward people and animals, and euthanasia is part of that.
Right. Yes. Yes. That it's that line that I don't ever want to make decisions on, Rachel. So hats off to you. Now, could you share a success story? Let's bring it lighter here. Can you share a success story that captures the impact of your community care model on both the pet and the family?
Ooh.
There's probably lots.
There are.
Give me your best one.
Without me.
Yeah.
Recently, I had a person that was hospitalized and their animals came to us because they were hospitalized. They had no family, no next of kin, no one to care for their animals. And I think when they finally got out of the hospital and got home and got healthy and we were able to give them their pets back, just seeing the joy that we brought them, that makes it all worth it for us. That for me specifically, like I love those happy endings. I have adopters that I adopted out 2 years ago that I run into in town at the grocery store or whatever, and they come and tell me about their dog. And that brings me so much joy. Like I don't remember every single dog or cat I adopted out, but a lot of them I do remember. And just hearing that they're so loved even years later, like that makes all the day-to-day stresses really worth it for us.
Yeah, I can imagine. And the dog's probably like a completely different dog.
Yeah. But the dog that I think I know in the shelter, I never actually know, right? Like, the ones they get home, they're completely different. Everything I thought that I was doing such a great meet and greet for probably got thrown out the window. But they're happy and in a home, and that just proves that behavior is fluid. So that's fine, too.
Yeah, exactly. Now, for listeners who want to help, what's the best way to support your organization or their local shelter?
You can always support your local shelters and ours, you know, through monetary donations and physical donations. We always need cleaning supplies. We always need pet supplies. We go through a ton of it. One of the other ways that people don't realize you can support is just publicly supporting, sharing our adoptions, sharing our wins, celebrating with us. You know, giving our staff a kudos or a pats on the back, recognizing our public programs we have in place and that we are trying, like just that public support really goes a long way. It helps us get buy-in from other community members and build more partnerships. So if you can't help, you know, with money or, you know, fostering or donating or volunteering, there's other ways that you can help. And it can just be the simple share on social media. It could be a quick message, just shouting out, celebrating good work. Like, there's so many ways that you can do that. And it doesn't have to cost you a dime.
Exactly. Yeah. Share the Instagram, Facebook. Let's see, Saginaw Animal Control for both Facebook and Instagram. And yes, those two. Give a share. Now, last question before we wrap up. If you had one policy change or community partnership that would move the needle in 2026, what would it be and why?
Statewide access to veterinary care.
I was just going to say, I'm like, it's got to be the veterinary.
It is. In Michigan, trap, neuter, and release is not recognized as a sustainable effort. We also don't get any kind of funding or support for cats or for TNR. We have very few laws even in regards to cats in Michigan. So, you know, that's always a hiccup when people have all these outside feral cats and they want us to help and they don't understand that everybody needs our help and we aren't given any additional resources to help. And then just, you know, the access to veterinary care, it's such a burden to shelters to be able to get every animal healthy and spay neutered and medically evaluated so that they are highly adoptable and sought after. It's really, really difficult. And it's on those shelters to create partnerships and find veterinarians and find people who can help with that. And then, you know, you're not just cleaning kennels and evaluating for behavior and doing meet and greets and doing adoptions. You probably are also fundraising on the side to be able to pay for all of it. So it's so much work. And if we could just have a little bit of help in that area, it would go a long way.
Yeah, absolutely. I hope you find that ideal partnership. I wonder if it's a thing for like veterinarians to donate. Like, I know there's probably some that do, but donate in a major way in terms of their services.
We've had volunteers that have, you know, donated their time with us. And that's really wonderful. Like, they'll come in and help do exams or rabies shots or just volunteer to see animals for simple things. And that really does go a long way. You know, and it doesn't have to be anything remarkable. It doesn't have to be every weekend. It could be just a couple hours here and there. But there's always some animal in the shelter that could benefit from a veterinarian laying eyes on them.
Absolutely. Well, hopefully there's going to be in the future some veterinary models that can incorporate shelters way more. So I guess we'll see. Well, we are out of time. Rachel, thank you for the work you have done and are doing in animal welfare and for reminding us that caring for animals often begins with caring for people. And thanks to our show producer, Mark Winter, for making the show possible. You can learn more about Rachel Horton and the Saginaw County Animal Care and Control on our show page. We'll include the link there. And if you have any questions, comments, or ideas for a show, please email me at beverly@petliferadio.com. So until next time, spread animal compassion.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.